It's really an honor to be here with you and to have been given the opportunity to speak about one of our earliest ancestors, Mahakashyapa, a teacher who helped shape who we are today as a Sangha. You know, Lin Ji, though, the founder of the Rinzai sect of Zen Buddhism, asked his students, followers of the way, what hinders you? And he answered his own question. He basically said that what was hindering them in their practice was that they didn't trust themselves. They kept looking outside themselves for someone to spoon-feed them the truth in words. Trust yourself, he told them. The whole point of the Buddha Dharma is just to see, just to experience for yourself what is true. What is reality? The sutras, the books, the koans, the teachers can only hope to nudge you out of the weeds, help you see the path. Walking down it is up to you. So given that, I suppose it should come as no surprise that the Buddha thought this was such an important point that he kept himself on the down low most of the time, as much as he possibly could. The last thing he wanted to do was create a cult of personality. Still, a lot's been written about him. And who's to say, after 2,500 years, what's true and what's embellishment when it comes to who he was as a man, as a personality? We do know how he taught, where he went, how he treated various people, how he saw them. And the same is true of Mahakashyapa, one of the Buddha's foremost students who we seem to know quite a bit about. And again, maybe we have the real skinny, the real news on him, and maybe later writers embellished on what they knew about Mahakashyapa for any number of reasons. But just briefly, it's interesting to hear that in many circles he was seen as controversial, not to say annoying. Called Papali by his parents, he was born in either 603 and died in 460 BCE, or was born in 520 and died in 380 BCE. Either way, living, if you do your subtraction, to at least 140 years in either case, some say even longer. The thing that made him annoying, or at least one of the things that made him annoying, is that he held himself to a very high standard and could be a bit of a perfectionist, a stickler for how things should be done. For example, he's known to have had disputes with Ananda, the Buddha's cousin and foremost attendant, who Bob Cutter will talk about next, chastising him for a number of offenses. Such trivial things as stepping on the Buddha's robe while he was sewing it, or accepting women as capable of enlightenment. These two heavy hitters not only had different views, but they also had generally incompatible dispositions. And these were the early days of the Sangha. And especially after the Buddha's parinirvana, after his death, there were plenty of disputes, or at least debates, going on. For one, before the Buddha died, he said it would be okay to let go of some of the minor rules. But the Buddha didn't say which ones he felt were minor, and the Sangha couldn't agree on which ones they were, so Mahakashyapa said, let's just keep them all. And they did. And they did. That's who he was. Still, despite this austere, sort of strict, pretty stern reputation, Mahakashyapa was also known for caring about the community, caring about teaching, and was particularly known for his compassion for the poor, to the extent that he was sometimes seen as a rebel. And that reputation was probably promoted by the fact that he wore his hair and beard long. I guess he looked like some kind of proto-hippie to most people. I mean, he'd go out of his way to get alms, a little bit of food from the poor, so that they could gain spiritual merit by feeding a monk. In the process, accepting and eating unwholesome food, the poor themselves felt was unworthy of them to share. But this is what he lived on to around age 140. I suppose it was organic. I want to interrupt this for a moment to talk about merit, this idea of gaining merit, because it's a good look at the development of Zen over time. Here we have Mahakasyapa talking about gaining merit by giving alms to the monks, but we know that by the time we get to Bodhidharma, who Roger from Golden Wind will talk about later, he's telling Emperor Wu that despite all his good works, he's gained absolutely no merit whatsoever. So what's going on there? Well, very briefly, what looks like a contradiction between Mahakasyapa, who we think of as promoting these traditional upright actions, and Bodhidharma, who told the emperor that there is no merit, is actually the difference between worldly, ego-driven merit and wisdom. Traditional Indian Buddhism it encourages us to accumulate merit through good deeds, whereas Chan or Zen, as established by Bodhidharma in China, focuses on emptiness. That is, attaining the inherent egoless nature of reality, where there's no I, there's no self to gain anything. Kindness is done because we want to be praised or want to bank merit or because we actually think we're doing something for some other. In other words, with a sense of I, these don't help us. Genuine merit is equivalent to attaining emptiness, Bodhidharma taught. In other words, Zen doesn't feed the hungry. Neither do you. Again, what you call delivering groceries is just the universe expressing itself as the vehicle to get some food to someone who needs it. Attaining this is living creatively, buoyantly. Letting go of that small I is liberation. Anyway, who can say whether Mahakasyapa's reputation was deserved or misunderstood or embellished or whatever? Again, this is more than 2,500 years ago, so you know how reliable are these stories as actual events? Possibly no more than what was posted on X this morning, although I tend to think that there's probably a heart of truth here. And there are indeed some great stories about it. Like how rather than dying, he entered a state of meditative suspended animation in a cave on a mountain called Kukutapada, somewhere where he is, as we speak, awaiting the coming of Maitreya Buddha, right now, future Buddha. And despite me taking up your time with these tales, how much do they really matter? Because in the end, what's important to us is his teaching, and there he shines. Because although he definitely had things to tell us, his principal teaching came through how he lived. And that was rough. Almost from the start, Mahakasyapa lived out of doors with no shelter whatsoever. He slept sitting up rather than lying down. He ate only one meal a day, and that he obtained by begging, eating nothing other than what he was given as he went door to door. And he never skipped the poor households. In fact, avoiding rich donors until the Buddha had to step in and say that no one's donation should be avoided. He never accepted an invitation to dine in anyone's home, and he refused any additional food once he'd finished his single meal. He had just three garments, an inner one, a middle one, and an outer one, and they were often obtained from the bodies of corpses thrown into places where the poorest of the poor were buried. He wore those rags until they gave out and couldn't be repaired. As he grew older, the Buddha asked him to give himself a break and come live with him, but Mahakasyapa refused, and the reason he gave is what this is all about. But before we get there, what was Mahakasyapa teaching his followers, of which he had a good number? For starters, he urged his followers of the way to live as strict a life as he did, carrying out the ascetic practices he was exemplifying, like wearing rags, living in burial grounds, having just the three robes, begging for meals. He believed this kind of life was essential to maintaining the wholesomeness of the Sangha. and for each follower's personal liberation, personal freedom. Despite this, at the same time, he also upheld that even the monks should avoid extremes and live neither too difficult nor too comfortable a life, in which case, what he considered difficult, I can't imagine. But he taught the middle way. Next, he emphasized that practitioners who had been around for a while, senior students, be held to a standard that would set a good example for new generations to come, and in this way should provide some mentoring for beginners. He taught that followers of the way should accept alms from everyone, rich or poor, making it clear that what was important was the intention of the giver, not how much she had to give. He taught the rules of discipline, especially for monks, to prevent any loss of the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha, in return, apparently saw Mahakasyapa as the greatest ascetic among his followers. He felt Mahakasyapa understood the essence of his teaching. I mean, he gave him the name Kasyapa and then added Maha, meaning great. So he called him Great Kasyapa, one who clearly understands that reality can be experienced directly in this present moment rather than through study alone. So again, in fact, the story goes that as Mahakasyapa aged, the Buddha told him he should take it easier, give up the most strenuous of his ascetic practices, come live with him. Mahakasyapa declined. Why? Here's some of the best stuff. First, tellingly, personal happiness. Mahakasyapa told the Buddha he found joy and peace in his simple, detached, possessionless life. And second, he wanted to do it for us, for you and me, for future generations. He wanted to be an example that the path of enlightenment could be found in extreme renunciation. Wow. So where have we heard similar things? Well, Jesus said it was easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. That's Mark 10:25. Jesus was talking about the dangers of wealth. He said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven." That's Luke. That's in Luke. And then much more recently, the great Henry David Thoreau urged us to quit accumulating stuff and simplify, simplify, simplify. So what does all this mean for us? Should we all pick up begging bowls and start going door to door around Seattle or Long Beach looking for lunch? It might gain us a nice stay in a comfortable padded room somewhere, but how much closer would it get us to waking up? These are different times. And the Buddha might answer that sure, maybe it would be good for some people, but in general, no, he advocated the middle way, a comfortable position between austerity and luxury. Although our definitions of those words might be different. I think that what we can learn most from Mahakasyapa on this point is the joy and comfort, the liberation we experience from not grasping for anything, material, intellectual, or spiritual, to the point that we are carried away with those things. We can have aspirations. We certainly have an aspiration to wake up. Should we pursue that aspiration to the point our family suffers or we lose our job? We can want a new car. Should we feel compelled to get one that's going to put us in so much debt that we feel the full weight of that vehicle on our shoulders? So much so that these things are a distraction from practice. Asceticism suited Mahakasyapa. And maybe some form of it will work for some of us, but for most of us, he's teaching us just to be prudent, to be generous with others, and to not burden ourselves with whatever material, intellectual, or spiritual thing will get in the way of waking up to this moment just as it is. Because with all his belief in and his adherence to rules, he's truly all about liberation. urging us to unburden ourselves of whatever is holding us down. So I can't conclude this talk without talking about the flower sermon. Shakyamuni Buddha holds up a flower because it's looked at as the foundational koan of our entire practice, the practice of Zen. Maha Kashyapa, as far as I can tell, doesn't have a bunch of koans like many other teachers. I can think of two off the top of my head, and that's all. This one, the flower sermon, and Maha Kashyapa's flagpole, both in Zen Master Jibong's koan collection, the one we all use. So here he is, here Maha Kashyapa is appearing in the koan called Shakyamuni Buddha Holds Up a Flower, where he shows us Zen's core principle, a special transmission outside the sutras, demonstrating wordless understanding, marking himself as the first ancestor, the first patriarch of Zen. Many of you can probably recite this koan from memory at this point. Long ago on Grand Rakuta Mountain, the Buddha sat down in order to give a Dharma talk before a vast assembly of followers. After sitting for an extended period of time in silence, he held up a flower. Everyone was silent, only Maha Kashyapa smiled. When Buddha held up the flower, Maha Kashyapa didn't say anything. He only smiled. His action, that's the core of Zen. Maha Kashyapa, who smiled, showed his direct, intuitive understanding of the nature of reality. He says nothing, only smiles, embodying that reality isn't found in words, in sutras, in talks, but in your own direct, intuitive experience of this life. This, by the way, is the key to all koans, breaking through conceptual thinking to a direct realization of truth. So that's a brief overview of who and what Maha Kashyapa was and what he means to us.